Markets are closed, government is closed, but the parks are open. And right about now, I'll bet I'm running full throttle on the Mississippi River. But first, let's take care of business and cover all the issues in another AgriTalk free-for-all.
Live from Independence Day Eve Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Pam Johnson join us. And right after the news, a quick update from Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Full Throttle Flory.
Oh, dude. Excellent. Hey, man, happy Independence Day.
Well, happy Independence Day to you, too. Right. Yeah. Well, I wish I was there with you with the wind in my hair, you know, maybe donating some worms to the Big Muddy. I somehow got roped into meeting my dad out at a piece of his land where he's buried a bin site and then followed over with a tiling operation. And apparently there are some rocks out there that he can't lift himself.
Right.
And so he needs me to come out and assist.
Well, I think you should do that.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And speaking of an assist, hydraulics are normally required in a situation that involves rocks of substantial size.
We're using raw corn-fed beef for the labor on this one, buddy. You better believe it.
Well, I can only wish the Michelson men well, if that is the case. Oh, man. Yeah, we got the free-for-all going, dude. Lots to cover on today's show, and looking forward to that. And, of course, we got Jennifer coming up here in just a little bit. All right, man, what you got in the news?
Well, here, this from Pro Farmer's Jim Wiesmeyer. I pulled this from some of his writing yesterday. 76% of Americans plan to celebrate Independence Day this year, but that's down from 86% in 2019. Now, Chip, those who do have plans for the holiday are forecast to spend over $76 on average for food items, and that's in line with historical trends for a total of about $6.52 billion. More than half of consumers are, in fact, planning a cookout or barbecue, and 28% of those expect to purchase additional patriotic items. We talked to the flag guy yesterday, man.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was a great conversation that we had, and talking about going to the grill, the cattle market really performed well going into the holiday weekend, and it was led by the nearby contracts. I think that's a strong indication that they're expecting some meat case supplies to clear out this weekend.
Well, earlier this week, Chip, we reported Senator Joni Ernst's refusal to clear the nomination of Doug Benevento for the post of Deputy EPA Administrator until the 52 requests are addressed. Now, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas has joined Ernst's hard line, citing the rise in the price of renewable identification numbers, or RINs. The story just keeps going, Chip.
This is unbelievable. We'll talk about it more with the team coming up here in a few minutes, but Senator Cruz throwing his hat into the block of Benevento is ridiculous. We talked about it with Grant Kimberly from the Iowa Biodiesel Board yesterday. If you didn't hear that conversation, I'd get on the app or on the website and go back and listen to that conversation with Grant. There's some really cool things going on for biofuels and biodiesel specifically that we talked about with Grant, but he had some great perspective on what's going on with Senator Cruz.
The U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement went into effect this week, but ongoing tensions over tariffs and other issues, which had prolonged the negotiation process, are complicating a smooth rollout of the accord. Still some loose ends to tie up there.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get those loose ends from Jim coming up in just a second.
Hey, get this from the "You're not going to believe this one, Chip" file. President Trump this week revisited his opinion of Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, admitting, quote, "I would say I was not happy with him at the beginning, but the president said he's becoming more happy." How do you like them apples?
It's unbelievable. The the switch that there for a while, I thought he was going to be asking Jay Powell to resign. And I understand that. He's not in a position, or he's not supposed to be in a position for that to happen. But I don't know what the tact is here. There's always a play
Oh, sure.
Going on when the president does something like this and makes comments like this, I wonder what it's going to be. We'll discover it later.
Yep. Well, Senator Charles Grassley says he is open to more COVID relief aid for states, but also noted a degree of skepticism. As the Senate Finance Committee chair, Grassley pointed to $150 billion in direct aid included under the CARES Act as examples of assistance already made available. A cautious approach from Senator Chuck, Chip.
Well, and you go back to the last time that he was on the show with us, Davis. He flat out said we should find out how the first $2.2 trillion in stimulus is impacting the economy. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the jobs data that was released yesterday morning, you have to – I mean, you got to tip your hat. We're getting those jobs back. Those jobs are coming back, and they're coming back fairly quickly. So maybe it is time to sit and wait. It certainly could be.
Well, and finally, Chip, a resurgence of coronavirus infections has put the brakes on some reopenings. Yeah. Fresh restrictions on dine-in restaurants and bars and other places where people tend to gather closely, including some retail outlets, have been observed. And on the economic front, St. Louis Fed Bank President James Bullard cautioned earlier this week that a wave of business failures related to COVID shutdowns could foment further financial peril. Chip.
And that right there is exactly why we are still looking for another round of stimulus to come from Congress. All right. Thanks, Davis. Joining us now is Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, I got to tell you, I got pulled pork in the fridge. I'm going to be taking advantage of that all weekend.
I'm jealous. I'm hoping to get some going tomorrow.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Okay. What have you been working on this week? I saw some flu-related stories.
Well, there was a lot of crazy headlines going around this week about a possible new pandemic virus. And as I dug into it, I reached out to Dave Pyburn, the chief veterinarian for the National Pork Board, and we had a really good discussion about these headlines and what's going around. And, you know, I just wanted to put a story out there this week to help people understand the truth about it. And basically, yes, there's a virus strain in China pigs right now, but it's not a new influenza virus. They've been surveilling it for the last 4 years and basically just reporting the findings in a journal article that went out in April and is just now being circulated in some of mainstream media.
Yeah, the anxiety over stuff like this has got to be at an all-time high. And getting that trustworthy information on this, Jennifer, obviously, it's so important, and I would assume that we can go to porkbusiness.com and read the whole story?
Yes, you can find the whole story there, and I think the big point we need to remember is we have to be able to discern science from over-sensationalism, and, you know, these findings basically are not anything new, but it is something that we're always monitoring here in the U.S. We're always looking at all the flu strains out there in pigs and people, and USDA has a joint project going with CDC to do just that.
Well, good deal. Good deal. You know, it takes biosecurity to a whole new level when we talk about things like this, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I think people can take some comfort in, that we are doing everything we can as a pork industry to make sure that we aren't passing influenza strains to our pigs and that we're not getting influenza from our pigs. And so that great biosecurity that we have in our barns makes a big difference.
Absolutely, it does. All right, Jennifer. Hey, thanks. You have a good 4th of July, okay?
You too.
All right, that is Jennifer Scheich, the editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Coming up next, we're going to get this free-for-all going right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
All All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk on this July 3rd. It's Friday. The markets are closed. The government is closed. But we're celebrating. We are celebrating Independence Day here on AgriTalk. And we got the free-for-all going. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. I got my black raspberries from my neighbor, so I'm ready.
It is that weekend. Yeah. Yes. So I was mowing lawn this week, and I've got the raspberries growing right on the edge of the lawn. Took me a little while to make that first round.
I like when they bring them to you.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. All right, Sean Haney. Hey, Sean, happy Canada Day. A day late, 2 days late.
Yeah, well, hey, that's okay. I appreciate that, Chip. Yeah, we had a nice, quiet Wednesday celebrating Canada Day on July 1st, as we do every year. And being so – I'm used to being actually in Montana in the U.S. on July 4th weekend for baseball tournaments. But, of course, with all that at a halt this year, it feels like a very odd July 4th weekend.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly does. We'll talk about that more here in just a second. And, of course, Pam Johnson, Iowa farmer, past president of NCGA and Mazal, joins us. Pam, how you doing?
Great. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood today.
Yeah, no doubt. Everything, you're not short on moisture up in northeast Iowa, are you?
No, we lucked out. We had a 4-inch rain before some of this heat set in, but I've got friends in western Iowa and southern Iowa that are really hurting already.
Right.
And, you know, Indiana and many other places.
Yeah, you get out into that western belt, and there's definitely some concern building. Yesterday, we talked with Ed Valley from Empire Weather on the morning show, Pam, and he basically said, more of the same right through the month of July. Above normal temperatures and a tendency to be below normal precipitation right through the heart of the Corn Belt. After the way that this market traded this week, that could be enough to light some more fireworks off in it, huh?
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, those weather rallies are pretty dicey.
Yeah, they certainly are. Certainly are. But, Jim, acres down 5 million on corn plantings from the March prospective plantings report. That caught everybody by surprise.
It absolutely did. And if you exclude the 1983 pick year, Chip, that's the biggest spread ever that I can see between the March intentions and June acreage.
Right, right. Yeah, this was and this was you take that 83 period out of there and this doubled the drop from the second biggest one, and it's a really kind of a shocker. Sean, I mean, here we are. We woke the markets up. What do you think?
it was a nice surprise, and you know what, a reversal from last year where it's like USDA's against us. This year it's like USDA's with us. I like the sort of seesaw action on that. And hey, Chip, all eyes on yield now. I'm not on the weather market bull yet. I'm a little bit reserved. Right. I think we should learn from the past couple of years where, you know, we were surprised to the upside on yield with a lot of adverse conditions. Now, this is a little bit different because it's dry and not wet. But we're cheerleading, I think. I'm hearing a lot of cheerleading today, this week in the markets. And I think we got to be a little bit cautious. Maybe sell into some of these rallies if we get a chance.
I think that is the attitude, without a doubt. What are you thinking, Pam?
Well, I think it's always a testament to the better genetics and crop management and, you know, saving water. Every drop gets used when the roots go down 12 feet. So, you know, that this crop can stand a lot of adversity versus even 10 years ago. But, oh, man, was it good to see the market go up. It just was like, oh, yeah, this can happen again.
Yeah. Changed everybody's attitude, I think, Pam. For the better. We needed that going into the weekend. Okay, July 1, not only was it Canada Day, but we also implemented USMCA. Jim, what should we expect from the implementation here over the next 30 days?
Oh, next 30 days. It's just not much, but there's going to be enforcement, both in the dairy issues lingering with Canada. Sean may want to talk about that. There's some doubts in the U.S. Quickly on that. And the auto sectors, Chip, I think that's the major changes on the, you know, worker requirements and the payment requirements.
Yep. Sean?
Yeah, the auto sector definitely got most of the attention through the negotiation, and it'll probably get most of the attention through the enforcement. The U.S. dairy industry about 2 weeks ago upset about how Canada has allocated those TRQs. Similar to what they did with Europe, they allocated the TRQs to Canadian-based processors. There's questions on how eager those processors will be to import U.S. dairy products. I guess time will tell on that. I felt... You know, when all of those press releases were coming out of the U.S. dairy side, I felt like a little bit like they shouldn't be shocked. This is a thing that Canada has done in the past. It was a little bit of, I don't know. I just was a little bit cynical in regards to it. They'll sort it out. The reality is that it's such a small piece of this entire agreement. Okay. When I talked to the Canadian side earlier this week, all the different industry groups, there's just relief, mm-hmm. Chip. That we held on to what we had. That's kind of the sentiment up here.
Gotcha. Yeah, President Trump is going to meet with Mexican President Obrador this coming week. I think it's July 8th in D.C. at the White House. Pam, what are your expectations for USMCA, for this meeting with Mexico? Because Mexico, this meeting is so important. Number one buyer of corn, number one buyer of pork.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm just taking a deep breath and saying thanks because it took a long time to get this over the finish line. And, you know, it was the yin and yang of we're going to pull out of it, and then the steel and aluminum tariffs were still on and a lot of uncertainty. So it was Corn Grower at Commodity Classic in 19, our top priority to get it over the finish line, and we had a great response from farmers all over the United States to send in letters and call their legislators. So we're all celebrating now, and I'm with Sean. You know, we'll get through the implementation. Yeah. I think the meeting between Mexico and the U.S. is a great start. Yeah, there's a few issues, but like you say, they're our number one customer and so important to us. I've been down on trade missions there thanking the customers there and thanking the government for staying open for business.
Right, exactly. Jim, when it comes to Mexico, is it labor issues? Is that the number one thing that we need to watch?
Labor and environmental enforcement, yeah. And that's where House Democrats are going to be closely watching, and I don't blame them. But Lighthizer is well attuned to that, Chip. I do want to ask Sean very quickly, will Trudeau make that July 8th meeting? There's word that he may here in D.C.
Yeah, that is up in the air at this point. There was talk earlier this week that there's reservations on the Canadian side for him to travel to the U.S. to be at that meeting. So I don't think it's been confirmed yet.
Okay. Part of the concern, obviously, there is COVID. Sean talked about kind of a reserved Canada Day. A lot of the celebrations here in the U.S. over the 4th of July are going to be canceled. Some are going forward. We had our first 50,000 new case day last week, Jim. I mean, are we riding a second wave? What's your take on everything that's going on?
Well, most of the experts are not calling it a second wave. They're saying it's a combination of not just additional lots more testing, but the inability of way too many younger people not to wear masks and doing some things that they should not do.
Yeah, the social distancing, when we opened up the restaurants and opened up the bars, even at limited capacity, some of the social distancing went away. But, I mean, what about during the protests and the riots and everything else? I mean, we don't hear much mention of that, and it's got to be a source of some of these outbreaks.
Well, the data they're saying, again, I'm just quoting the experts who ought to know, balanced experts are signaling it's not showing up in the data, Chip, that was a cause for concern. Now, the Memorial Day holiday with the celebrations, yep, et cetera, you can signal some, you know, implications there. But I think it's primarily as a result of bigger groups meeting. And, of course, you had your big family groups meeting on Memorial Day. Et cetera.
All right.
Yeah, they're
all
saying that family spreads amongst family members is one of the big reasons for spreading at this point.
All right. Hey, guys, we need to take a quick break here. But when we come back, we got to get back to talking about the RFS and Senator Ernst taking a stand against those gap year waivers. We'll do that next on the Free For All here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update for Friday, July 3rd. Markets and government offices are closed today in observance of the Independence Day holiday on Saturday. Focus in the corn market coming out of the long holiday weekend will be on weather. The post-fourth period is always critical weather-wise as corn pollinates. USDA's shocking 5 million acre drop in corn plantings versus March intentions puts even more focus on weather this year. Forecasts call for hot and mostly dry conditions across the Corn Belt through mid-July. Key will be where the ridge of high pressure develops, which will determine which areas get the hottest temperatures and which states may receive timely rains. Weather will determine if funds continue to cover their hefty net short position they built into late June, decide to pause, or restart pumping money into the short side of the market. Soybeans and wheat are likely to follow the lead of the corn market. The critical weather period for soybeans isn't until August, and wheat is fighting seasonal pressure from the winter wheat harvest. Livestock traders will keep a close watch on the cash and product markets coming out of the 4th of July. Cattle and hog slaughter levels have returned to normal, but there remains a backlog of supplies that must be worked through. This is likely to keep the cash markets under pressure. The post-fourth time frame typically isn't a strong one for beef demand, but the sharp plunge in wholesale beef prices from their historic surge is allowing retailers to feature beef again. Despite lower beef prices, pork continues to have a competitive price advantage, and chicken prices are also actively competing for consumer dollars at the meat case. For Markets Now, I'm Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, wishing each of you a happy and safe 4th of July weekend.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us. I'm your host, Chip. We've got the free-for-all going. Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney, the regular crew, is back with us. We were talking about the spike in COVID-19 confirmed cases that we're seeing. But, Sean, during the break, you had some perspective on that.
Yeah, well, we've seen with the cases in the U.S., as we see states pull back on their opening up and being a little more cautious in the last week, we've seen the cases kind of spike like a hockey stick. The graph is definitely not in our favor. But that's the cases. I'm really following the graph of deaths, and we have not seen the death graph spike up to in the same way that the cases have. I think that's a very much a positive, but something to watch very, very closely here in the coming weeks to see if that changes.
Yeah, no doubt. Pam, are you? Yeah, I feel like for the first time I actually know some people that have a confirmed case.
Yeah, I really came home in the two counties that I do business in, and have friends, people from church, people from the hospital, people from a factory. So I don't know. It just it just makes it more real. And even, yes, it's great that death rates are going down, but, you know, reading anecdotal stuff from people, from a nurse that was hospitalized, and the symptoms that hang on, so it's not just the cough and the sore throat, but it's like clots and strokes and heart attacks. And, you know, so even if I've heard some people say, I am so over this, I'm getting back to my regular life. And then I see a lot of people still in the grocery store in the morning wearing masks, so it varies.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt. Okay, let's go on to the RFS and the defense of the RFS and the request for those gap year waivers. Boy, Jim, Senator Ernst from Iowa was on the show earlier this week, explained why she is blocking the nomination of Doug Benevento to be the deputy EPA administrator at EPA. But then we get news that not only is she blocking it from his nomination from leaving the committee, if it does get out of the committee, now Senator Cruz says he's going to step in front of it and block it. What is going on?
Because he's putting the pressure on the White House for RINs, that he wants relief for, you know, RIN prices. It's just it's more on the political front. But I do think that Senator Ernst has more than got, finally, EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler's attention, because he said earlier this week that there are definite questions regarding those retroactive waivers, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, Pam, good for Senator Ernst on this. I talked with Congresswoman Axne out of the 3rd District of Iowa this week, too. She's throwing her support behind it as well, saying we need to know what's going to happen with those waiver requests. And I mean, it's just so frustrating, the uncertainty of it all.
It's like whack-a-mole, right? You know, I'm so over Ted Cruz. And if the oil industry wants RIN relief, which he's asking for, blend the damn ethanol. And that's how you get RIN relief.
Yes. Yeah. It's simple, isn't it? I mean, if you understand the program, it's pretty simple on how you get RIN relief. And that is you buy that ethanol, you blend it with your gasoline, and you put it out there for consumers to buy, and you make money on the ethanol. It's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, and I think there was also good news. I heard you interview Grant Kimberly on Thursday's show, and the news in Iowa with the money, more money coming, the Governor Reynolds is going to use CARES money, $7 million of it, for biofuel infrastructure in Iowa, which I think is huge. You know, that being said, we don't have a lot of population in Iowa, but it is a big start here to make sure that we can get more stations offering it to consumers.
Yeah, that is so important, getting the infrastructure up and built and going for it. Speaking of infrastructure, $1.5 trillion, with a T, trillion-dollar infrastructure bill passed by the House. Jim, what's its future?
Not this year, because the Senate Republicans and the White House have pretty big differences with the House approach over either lack of funding, avenues, et cetera, and some details. The White House statement of administration policy actually said it was negative to the rural sector. It's coming, Chip, but not until next year.
Okay. You know, this
looking forward to that. You know, how long have we worked on the WERDA bill and for roads and bridges and water projects and broadband? And I don't know the details, but I really was disappointed.
You know, it passed the House, but the reaction that we got from Congressman Graves, Sam Graves out of Missouri, who's been on the show several times. I did not talk with Congressman Graves. All I saw was his press release. You know, the wish list was included on that. And when you look at the party line vote on it, Jim, it does appear that it stepped out. It couldn't generate any Republican support.
No, but the positive side of this, Chip, is at least it's on paper now and it's passed a chamber. And so now we know what the issues will be. So I think I'm more optimistic on this. At least that's the thing I was waiting for, to get to the final effort where they can compromise. But I just don't see it before the elections.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess I'll take a bit of a optimistic view of it then myself there. Haney, what else is going on up north of the border that we need to know about? What's the crop? What's the climate up there?
Oh, prairies quite wet. So, you know, if you're looking at spring wheat yields and maybe paying attention to canola, I don't know. We have quite a crop coming. There's lots of moisture. The reality is, are we going to get the heat here through the summer to push it forward? We've had some epic storms in Manitoba. Like last weekend, people got 10 inches of rain outside of Brandon. Like, what do you do with 10 inches of rain? We've had big hailstorms through Alberta, which is typical of this time of the year. As you move to the eastern side of the country, where we have the bulk of the corn and the bean crop, it's quite dry, and similar to the Midwest, especially as you move into the Maritimes. So people have a good crop coming, but boy, they need some moisture.
Yeah, yeah, similar situation here, no doubt about it. Okay. Yeah. That got us close enough to the end of the segment that I'm going to go ahead and turn the topic to China. I did this on purpose so that I could limit our time that we spent on China this time, you guys. Jim, wow. The tensions, I don't know if they've never been higher.
And they're accelerating. So
yeah.
The pattern does not look good. Our China watcher told us that the next key chip is if and when China's Communist Party media begins off the rails. We were told if they start officially browbeating Trump.
You know, but the moves that Beijing has made against Hong Kong, don't we need to stand up and do something about this, Pam?
Yeah, you know, the sanctions, as long as a lot of other countries are doing it also, and then, you know, the UK is going to open their borders for those people who are refugees that want to come from Hong Kong, so are we going to do that also? It's a lot more complicated issue than I've got a handle on.
Yeah, Canada the same. We've got 300,000 Canadian citizens living in Hong Kong. I'll tell you, if I was one of them, I'd be moving back to Canada.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it. And talking about moving out of Hong Kong, the UK has said that they would allow almost 3 million Hong Kong citizens to move to the UK. Again, like Pam said, you want to have a coalition when you go against China, but it seems like China is just, they're just going against the whole globe on this one, aren't they, Jim?
Yeah, they made that decision. You know, and even on the people that Britain has offered to bring back, they have already signaled they'll block any immigrant, to do so. But they're trying to initially go over to Taiwan, by the way, even though I think some of those Canadians, Sean.
Yeah, it's a super concerning situation. And I watched on Bloomberg TV this week, I think it was on Tuesday, or early Wednesday morning in Asia, where they were celebrating the 23, I think it was 23 years of being involved with China instead of Britain, and I don't think the word celebrating was really indicative of how everybody looked on their face.
Well, Sean, isn't China preventing you all from consular access to that Chinese Canadian prisoner?
Yes, the two Michaels. Yeah.
Yes.
So they're preventing diplomats from visiting them, and we really have no idea how they're exactly being treated. And it's a really, China is doing a lot of things, you know, besides just the US-China trade war. There's a lot of other stuff happening. Canada being impacted, Australia, they're recommending no Chinese participate in tourism in Australia this summer. Like it's China's out of control.
Okay. Hey guys, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about this great country. Sean, we invite you to talk about your great country. when we come back, because we are celebrating the 4th of July right here on AgriTalk.
Because the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
And I'm proud to be an American.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Let's wrap up this week's free-for-all. We've got Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Iowa Farmer Pam Johnson, and Sean Haney from Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Jim, before we celebrate the 4th here on AgriTalk, there was some news that we could celebrate that came our way yesterday morning in that jobs data. 4.8 million jobs added is how they describe it. I don't know if I would call it added or not. We're getting them back. Unemployment down to 11.1%. These are trends that are all going in the right direction.
Yes, and we're at the 50% retracement mark, Chip, of the downturn we've saw in the lost jobs since the pandemic. But there's lots of good news, but lots of uncertainty, because this survey was taken in mid-June, and now we've seen with the lockdowns continuing now, or resuming in a few states, there could be uncertainty for the next month's report.
And the other piece of uncertainty there, too, is, you know, although temporary unemployment is dropping, permanent job losses are still rising and expected to do so next month. So it's just, you know, get into the details and break down the numbers.
Yeah, yes. Those continuing claims, they ticked up to 19.2 million. Those are some numbers that we need to pay really close attention to here. And it's going to take time. I'm afraid that we look at some of these base numbers and the knee-jerk reaction is that it's more optimistic than what it really is. Guys, yesterday I had so much fun talking with Jeff Schauber from Valley Forge Flag Company. He talked about demand for the U.S. flag during the first half of this year, and specifically through the COVID quarter that we just lived through. And it was so encouraging, Pam. He said that demand for the flag is off the charts, and there seems to be, if that's any indication, that we're starting to see a resurgence of that patriotic spirit is starting to come back here. I loved hearing that message.
Yeah, you know, I don't think patriotism ever left. We've certainly had a lot of challenges as Americans, as everybody in the world has. I got the colors flying today. You know, I think he talked about how we're at home so much now. So yeah, we're paying attention to some of the things that we took for granted. We're also thinking about, it just looks really good to see that flag flying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt. Jim, the celebration in your part of the world is going to be a little more subdued than what it normally is. But nonetheless, there is reason to celebrate.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of Midwestern people out here, myself included. And I remember when I grew up going to my Uncle Frank's and Aunt Irma's farm in Jamestown, Illinois, where we had homemade ice cream, chicken, ham, etc. And that's what I do here every year.
Love it. Love it. You still got a homemade
homemade ice cream.
Crank?
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it.
Oh, man. Yeah, the celebration is going to be happening at the Florey House as well. There's no question about that. I've got a brand new daughter-in-law that, well, I shouldn't say brand new, it goes back to last fall, but I don't know anybody as Americana as Bailey. And she has brought a new revived spirit into this family. And we've always been a patriotic group, the Floreys have, but man, it's amazing what happens when you get just an added dash of it. It kind of becomes exponential then in how it is influencing the family here. It's a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Yeah. But I tell you what, the need is there. the need is there to celebrate, Pam, with all the protests that are going on, with all the division that is happening in the country. We need to celebrate. We need this.
Yeah, we do. And it will be different, but I think it also, there's a lot of good in it. I mean, our tradition was always, it's one of my favorite holidays. We would go to the town. There's a huge parade. You know everybody in it. You see the machinery and the horses, and, you know, the kids get to pick up candy. And four generations of my family sat in the same spot for decades. And this year it'll be a little different. We'll stay in our little family bubble, but we will still celebrate, and it will be good to be together. And it will be good for all of us to think how we can bring all of us back together.
Right. Right. Absolutely. All right, let's look forward to the week ahead. Haney, what are you watching most closely?
Oh, this continuing ebb and flow of the U.S.-China situation. Does China had a really good May in terms of buying U.S. products. We'll see if that continues as more data continues to flow in. I just think this whole geopolitical situation, Chip, is just so fascinating with so many levers being pulled and moving parts. As a person that likes to follow that, there's no shortage of things to read about and talk to people about on that front.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Okay, Wiesmeyer, what are you watching in the week ahead?
Well, not only the China thing, but in particular, like you said before, now with the lower acreage, at least for corn, we're into a potential weather market. So you got to call a couple of those meteorologists on that ridge where it gets and how long it stays, Chip.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I got a feeling when I ask Pam what she's going to be watching most closely the week ahead, it's probably that weather forecast, right?
Yeah, keeping a real close eye on the market. And we didn't have time to talk about it, but we had roundtables beginning policy meetings this week at corn growers across the state, and farm profitability is the number one issue.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about that. Farm profitability is right up there on the top of the list of things that we need to fix. You guys, thank you so much for making time for us and being part of the free-for-all again today. Jim Wiesmeyer from Pro Farmer, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio, and Pam Johnson, farmer from Northeast Iowa, past president of NCGA and Mazal. All right, everybody, happy 4th of July. Be safe, but celebrate.